Dick Cavett. You got to love Dick Cavett. Dick Cavett, the thinking man's talk show host. I love, when I was coming up, actually I never came up, but Dick Cavett was the man. And he still is. He's joining us right now. He's got a new book out called Talk Show, Dick Cavett. And he's joining us now from Long Island. Mr. Cavett, how are you?
Well, I'm okay. But, you know, I got uncomfortable during your monologue. Can you guess why?
No, why?
I didn't expect to, but when you've written daily, as I got to do for Johnny and Jack, and I guess the older people know who what their last names are, and Merv, the first thing you did was stay around long enough to hear the monologue and hope to God your jokes got in ahead of the other guy's jokes. And when they didn't, you weren't sure of continued employment.
Yeah.
So to hear a series of good jokes, none of them mine, is painful.
Oh, it's painful, yeah.
However, I managed to laugh.
Yeah, well, we were all pretty uncomfortable during it, so you weren't alone. Now, I would... Writing for Merv Griffin has got to be different than writing for Johnny. How do you get your head in?
Writing for each person is different.
Yeah.
And the key, not to get ponderous about it, is you have to be able to hear that person in your head automatically and word it right for them.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't word it the same for Johnny as you would for Jack.
No. But how hard is it to get Merv Griffin in your head, though?
I never tried. By the way, Merv, I should add to that, should he be listening somewhere, as people say, is that he was a hell of a good boss, very, very easy to work with.
Yeah.
Jack was sometimes painful, neurotic, dangerous, and all of those qualities made him a brilliant presence on television, where the great Kenneth Tynan said once, when Jack's on the screen with someone else, you only watch Jack for fear that you might miss a live nervous breakdown on your home screen.
Yeah, and he certainly had them.
Yeah.
He did walk. You never walked off a show, did you, like Jack Parr?
I never was on it.
No, did you ever walk off a show?
Oh, walk off. No, I never walked off. I let the guests do that.
Who walked off?
Including the ever-popular Lester Maddox, governor of Georgia, when he said I had called all the people in Georgia bigots.
Yeah.
And I had 1 minute to apologize.
Yeah.
And this went back and forth for quite a while. And then I finally said, well, if I've called anyone a bigot who isn't a bigot, I apologize. And Lester hauled out. How do you say it where you come from? Left the stage.
He left the stage, yes. Stage right. Yeah. I'm sure it was right. Did he bring his axe handle with him? Wasn't he doing the axe handle?
Well, now you've made a mistake that he loved.
Yeah.
He would say, people say they see pictures of me with a shaking axe handle of colored people. I never did that. I love the Negro people. I have Negra, careful to say, people on my staff. I've done things for them. The trick was that they were pick handles.
Okay. Well,
so he loved it when Eastern journalists, who in fact printed the word nigger when a Southerner had said Negra, which is reprehensible, when they made that pick handle, axe handle error, as he probably called it.
Yeah. Well, we miss him, don't we? We miss a lot of these characters. Not him so much. Norman Mailer, maybe we miss more than...
Oh, God, yes, yeah. I do miss Norman. He came back on the show a couple times after the notorious Gore Vidal Mailer Janet Flanner show, which is, to this day, has you on the edge of your chair watching it through.
Yeah. What was running through that now? Vidal, I know Vidal and Mailer didn't like each other, but I don't think Gore Vidal liked anyone.
Well, they had been friends.
Yeah.
The friendship took a slight hit in the green room when Norman head-butted Gore, nearly knocking him out.
Did he seriously?
Yes. Gore had entered the green room, I wasn't there, and placed a hand on Norman's shoulder and said, how are you? And Norman got up and headbutted him. I found this out from Gore after the show, Gore said, you're absolutely crazy. And he lent material to that theory on the show later.
Yeah. Well, I know that Buckley threatened to punch out Gore Vidal at one point, so maybe it was actually Vidal's. Just something about him made people want to hurt him.
Well, he and Buckley were sort of like fish hooks in each other's flesh.
Yeah.
In a way, they admired each other in various ways and not others. And the funny, antiquated, exact wording of that thing you just referred to, sorry, mm-hmm. English teachers, was, don't call me a crypto-Nazi, you queer, or I'll sock you in the face and you will stay plastered.
Uh-huh.
It's not exactly...
not his best quote.
It's not Sonny Liston talking, is it?
No. But it is sort of the submarine punch all over again.
Remember the funny Sonny Liston fight was 27 seconds or something?
Yeah, you could miss it.
Bob Hope said, I went to the fight and Sonny sat down before I did.
they don't make them like that. By the way, before I'd be remiss if I didn't go and say that Sid Reinars says hello. You know Sid?
Good.
He claims he lived next door to you.
Where does he claim that took place?
One of those doors that you were living next to. I don't know. I think from Nebraska.
Oh, yeah.
Sid Reinars, yeah. Reinars, I believe it is.
There is someone I lived near once with a similar name.
Uh-huh. Oh.
It doesn't come to mind at the moment, but yeah. I would not want to question Sid's credentials on this.
Yeah. Actually, there is some dispute as to where in Nebraska you actually did grow up.
Well,
could you clarify that?
There's some dispute as to whether I grew up. if your idea of growing is to get more than 5, 6 3/4 inches. But in order for the record,
yeah,
we lived in Gibbon. They had no hospital, so I had to be born somewhere. And so it was Kearney. Moved to Grand Island, thence to Lincoln, until I went to New Haven to matriculate. Can you say that on...
I couldn't say it. You said it very well, I thought.
Yeah. By the way, on somebody's show recently, and I think it was... I don't know what it was. I've done a whole lot of them about the book recently. But somebody said... it was Ferguson, Craig Ferguson. I mentioned Gibbon, and then foolishly added, when I left there, it was thought of as the beginning of Gibbon's decline and fall.
Mm-hmm. Good. That's good.
I thought Ferguson might not know the reference. Well, of course, but he did.
Yeah, no, he's smart.
And he said, but do you think anyone in this audience knows what Gibbon's decline and fall means? And a man said, I do, and stood up and took a bow.
Yeah.
So that's encouraging, considering how far behind other countries we are, isn't it?
That's a classy show there.
Yeah,
Ferguson's
true.
By the way,
are you heard in the 27 countries our American students rank behind in science and math?
Possibly.
I hope so.
Yeah, certain percentage. I couldn't give you the exact percentage because I was a C student in math myself.
I wonder how many American students can name 27 countries.
That's a good point. Well, we're speaking of the time. How do you find talk these days? Now, you sort of were one of the people...
As in an old punchline, you turn on the set and there it is.
Yeah. But, I mean, the quality of it. Now, there are certainly no Jack Parrs anymore. I mean, Jack, of course, he was unique, so that's not going to happen.
No.
But even the level of conversation, we have hosts who tend not to want to really know the answer to anything that they're asking. Don't you feel?
It's hard for me to answer that in that I'm not addicted to television as much as I was in Nebraska, when to this day I could tell you every network schedule in prime time for every night of the week, if you want to test me on that on some later show. And the other difficulty is that I know,
you know,
almost all the people involved,
yeah,
and
right,
many of them are friends of mine.
I mean, without naming names.
Without naming names, the question, as Buckley say, becomes, has talk deteriorated? I think so, in a way, partly because there's too much of it. I mean, the great Mort Saul predicted 30 years ago that about this time he had run a study, everyone in America would have his own talk show.
Yeah.
And it seems to get close to that.
Yeah.
I love the long-form format, which some people I'm sure I didn't invent it. But I remember how laughed at I was at a production meeting on the old Tonight Show and Johnny when I complained that the great Peter Ustinov was given the same amount of time on that night's show as some ditzy singer to sit and talk. And I said, Ustinov's probably the best talk show guest in history. Couldn't we give him two segments or even a whole show? And that laughed. yeah. as if that were the best joke I came up with that day. But
Well, Parr used to do that, didn't he? You let people run on. That was what was so amazing.
If he liked it, he did. I don't know if Jack ever did a full evening with anyone, and he could easily have, of course. You know, his advice to me was classic. When I was about to do a show, he called and he said, "Kid, don't do interviews." You know, I mean, and I thought, does he mean do a musical show or sing or read poetry? Or he said, "Just don't do interviews. That's let me ask you this, and clipboards and David Frost and what's your favorite color. Make it a conversation."
Yeah.
And really, at its best, that's what the talk show is.
Right.
Well, whatever the length of the segment is.
Well, in England, they call them chat shows, right? Isn't that maybe that's more to the
point? I know. They icky everything up in England,
don't they? Yeah. Thought maybe it was a good thing. Now,
calling homosexuals Nancy boys and things like that.
Yes.
What are we going to do about the British?
We tried to do what we could, and it didn't seem to work out.
Oh, I wrote that.
You wrote that? Yeah, okay, you wrote that.
I'm going to pretend I wrote that.
You never had a second banana out there with you. I mean, the format seemed to be host, a second banana. Who, you know, I have my Jim Packard.
No, at the risk of doing a dreadful joke on that phrase. I never. It was suggested, and I had the great Fred Foy who sat in the front row, and I referred him as all. But I didn't feel the need of that. And at the beginning, I felt the need of anything I could get, and probably wished I had someone there at times who might not have failed to listen to what the guest had just said. I think I talked to Ferguson about that awful feeling when you begin of you're being signaled from five places in the studio and someone's just whipped away a sign that you didn't read, and what am I supposed to do, go to commercial? Or, oh, my God, the guest's lips have stopped moving.
Yeah.
What could they possibly have been talking about?
Yeah. Well, you did have one die on you. I didn't see that particular show, but that's got to stop a show pretty quick.
But you know what's interesting about that, and people may think you're kidding, and it's not as with comedians dying on the show. I wrote a blog about that on my Times blog thing online, and I think it started with hardly a week still passes when somebody a month, let's say now, doesn't say, "I remember the look on your face when that guy died on your show." Well, then I have to say, "Were you there?" "No." "Well, then you didn't see it, really, because it never aired." "Oh." And these people, many of them could pass a polygraph that they saw it, they could describe it. Now, I don't know whether that's a tribute to my description the next night. Pete Hamill got a great column out of it because he was sitting next to the then dead man. Mm. And, or what, but it certainly shows you the value of eyewitnesses, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And he was, a health advocate or something, wasn't he?
Well, whom would the gods allow to die on television except a health expert?
Speaking of health, a much underrated movie, I thought, your Altman film.
Wow. Well, you made my day mentioning that.
Yes, and we expected to see more of you on the screen after, because the Altman thing should have been a big break as far as cinematic release.
It was great fun. It had James Garner and Cal Burnett and Lauren Bacall and Glenda Jackson, and fun to shoot down at that preposterous hotel in Florida, that big pink hotel, whose name slips me now. But, that movie was thwarted a little by a couple of remarks Bob Altman made in New York Magazine, which began in an article, "I'll give you this interview if you print my first sentence as, 'The Fox executives are scum.'" Now, I hope that Roger Ailes isn't listening, because, of course, he was referring to Fox Studios. Yeah.
The studios, of course.
And the movie came out briefly and then went back quickly, and it's got a lot of good stuff in it. And it's called Health, and it's got a lot of political parody and satire, and good performances and stuff.
And your role in that?
I did make it from that to the movie Beetlejuice.
Oh, you were in Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
There you go. Another fine film.
Slipped your mind.
Yeah. That was not an Altman film, however, I don't believe.
Have you ever seen Beetlejuice?
Yes, it's hilarious. Actually.
Yeah, it's a cult film. Yeah, you really have seen it. Every so often, it appeals to adults and little kids, and apparently no one in between.
Yeah. I don't remember your role in it, though, I'm sorry to say.
Well, I was the wonderful Catherine O'Hara's agent, was one of those at the table, dinner table.
Oh, you were?
The ghost made us go around the table singing, "Hey, oh. Mr. Tallyman," and so on.
Yeah, a great scene.
It was fun to do.
Oh, I got to see it again.
I even made a contribution to it by showing Tim how he could stop having the stagehands underneath the table, sticking their arms up through holes and hitting the actors in the eye with the shrimp that were supposedly attacking them, saying, "Why don't you start with the shrimp on the faces, roll, have them pull the hands down and run it backwards?"
Yes, and they did that.
That was my contribution to cinema. But every so often, a five-year-old will lead his mother over to me on the street in New York and say a line from Beetlejuice. And then she'll say, "We have to show it to him every Friday night or there's no peace in our
no
house."
Kidding. And, of course, Forrest Gump. You were almost central in Forrest Gump, one could say.
That's another one where people think they saw things they didn't.
Yes.
Even technical people in the business will say that old scene you used with John Lennon and you. Well, John Lennon, of course, who was dead by then, had to be keyed in. But Tom and I shot that for the movie, and it was interesting because this will give you the tyranny of certain artists in the movie business. Great costumer on the movie and meticulous, and I wore a shirt with a collar alternating red and white stripes. Just before shooting, she noticed that in the real shirt, stripes alternated white and red rather than red and white from the top. I'm not making this up. It sounds like S.J. Perelman or something. And they had to stop and remake the shirt. For those millions of viewers of the movie who would say, "Hey, the shirt's wrong. I remember the show."
Unbelievable.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. You got to love it, though.
Costumers have run out during giant spectacle scenes and said, "The epaulets are wrong. We got to cut." Amazing.
Well, I have to tell you that the only letter I ever wrote to a network, complaining about a show being canceled, was when I wrote to ABC.
Oh, my God.
When they were going to cancel your show on ABC. And I said something to the effect of, the only intellectual or show on television, which was a mistake. That was a bad approach, I think.
That's a word you don't necessarily want to have attached to you for commercial reasons.
I know, and I wish I had the letter back now, in a sense. But I
should have just said the only jackassly entertaining show that you have on your network.
That's what I meant to say. But the only time, and I didn't hear from them. So
well, I hope I never have to do the same for you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Dick. It's a pleasure to talk with you. I know you probably have things to do there on Long
Island. Yeah, I got to go on shows where they mention my new book.
Yeah, I really should have. I know you don't do that type of interview.
No,
though,
I would never plug anything.
No. We don't want to roll the clip or anything, do we? I don't think so. Talk Show is the name of the book. Dick Cavett, Confrontations, Pointed Commentary, and Off-Screen Secrets. They're all in here. And it's a great pleasure speaking with you.
I knew we would get on.
Yes, I know. I always thought that when watching. Yeah. I thought, boy, if we could hang out, this would be such fun.
Do you get nasty remarks from, and you say anything about Sarah Palin? I still do from my column, in which I said she seems to have no first language.
I can tell you, I may have to use that one.
We'll trade.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Dick Cavett, thank you. New book, Talk Show.